Middays with Mannix and Mannix.
I was going to listen to that, but then I just carried on living my life.
With Jeff Mannix.
What kind of bear is best? Black bear.
And Taylor Mannix.
I'm a Tony Romo fan and he retired, so now I bleed green. Go Birds!
Call 207-775-2217 or 1-866-811-9505.
Phone is ringing. Oh my God.
Every single thing that every fan does at home or at the stadium makes a direct impact in the game.
It's about to get all stupid up in here!
Middays with Mannix and Mannix begins now. Here's Jeff and Taylor.
The weather outside is weather.
It's called Two Brothers. Two Brothers. It's just called Two Brothers.
You're Larry Bird.
Good afternoon! And welcome into our lunch hour on this Hump Day Wednesday edition of Middays with Mannix and Mannix. Our lunch hour is brought to you by Heidi's Brooklyn Deli in South Portland and Auburn. Order right now on Uber Eats, Grubhub, and DoorDash. Heidi's Brooklyn Deli, a labor of love since 1994. Jeff and Taylor on the microphones will wrap the Maine Mariners season with head coach and general manager Rick Kowalski coming up at the bottom of the hour. But we start off our Heidi's Brooklyn Deli lunch hour today by talking some Boston Red Sox. And one of the great people to talk Boston Red Sox with, he writes about the team for the Boston Globe. We are joined by Alex Speer. Alex, welcome back to the show. How have you been?
I guess hungry. A good deli, man. That's always exciting at the lunch hour. But otherwise, been great and fascinated by a season that has gone in a very different direction than I think anyone ever expected.
That is a good way to put it, I think, at this point, with how this season has gone. I do tend to agree with you that this is probably not what a lot of observers had pegged for this baseball team this year. But I'll ask you from the 30,000 foot view for you, what's gone wrong with this baseball team so far this season?
A lot. I think the offense is the obvious starting point when you just have a group that, you know, that's extremely inconsistent. And I don't think I think that the Red Sox took a risk in terms of the degree to which they were relying on young players who don't necessarily have an established big league floor in terms of what their projected performance would be. And so that means you have variability. It can be variability that you may catch a wave with a bunch of young guys who outperform what their projections are. But when you have a number of players in the lineup who underperform their projections, which happens more often. It's projections are more performance relative to projections are far more volatile when you have less service time in the big leagues. Then you can have an offense that has basically collapsed. I think that there are signs of improvement, and I don't think that it's a coincidence that those are coming as the weather warms up a little bit and as Fenway turns into a little bit less of a hitting graveyard. But it's been staggering underperformance by the offense, particularly at Fenway Park, that has put the team in a pretty tough position.
Yeah, that's where I was going to take it next, Alex, and it's great to have you on and get your insight on this team. Always a pleasure to read your work and hear it as well on this programming. And I got to ask, I mean, right on that line, 8-18 now at Fenway. I mean, it's so strange because it feels like last year they almost got rid of that narrative that they were struggling there. They got the team back on track over 500, and now it's right back to square one. What have you made of it? And is it just a coincidence that all these bad performances are happening at Fenway Park?
I think that it is. I don't think it's a coincidence in the sense that they don't have a lot of hitters who have been driving the balls to that big thing in left field with loft. Right? When you have a lineup that features a lot of where your right-handed hitters, save for Wilson Contreras, are pretty heavily like line drive and or ground ball hitters, then that's not going to be the thing that makes Fenway Park turn into a pinball machine. Left-handed hitters pulling the ball at Fenway Park, again, you're going to have some pretty loud outs. Like, Marcelo Meyer, his numbers for the season are clearly a disappointment, right? Like relative to what the sense is surrounding his ability. I can think of probably a handful of balls that he's pretty much crunched into center field, right center at Fenway Park, that ended up just dying either on the warning track or just before it in cold conditions. This is the challenge of being a left-handed hitter at Fenway Park when you're not using the big green thing. So I think that, you know, that's the offense has not been the offensive profile has not been a hand-in-glove fit for the park, which is in turn left the Sox, even though they've been pitching really quite well, kind of working uphill in a lot of these games. And it's made for a slow drip offense at home.
Yeah, and I'll ask you if you think these struggles are simply because the team wasn't constructed correctly to play at Fenway Park, or it's because the guys just aren't quite doing what they need to do in order to be successful at Fenway Park. I guess I'm asking if this is a player or if this is a coaching issue.
Or roster construction, right? And I think the answer is all of it. when you have a team that's like, when you have these kinds of profound struggles at home, and you know, this is like going through an 8-18 stretch at Fenway Park is atypical. This is not something that you see within the normal bounds of like, this is just kind of a normal stretch that teams go through the season. No, this is a really bad stretch in the type that typically is seen when the Red Sox end up featuring a last place team. But I think that a little of everything has gone wrong, right? I think that the roster, the lineup construction in the off season, again, Wilson Contreras like has been really, really good. And I think that, his production has probably exceeded that of, has certainly exceeded that of what Alex Bregman did over the course of a full season with the Red Sox. So it's worth remembering that pre-injury last year, Bregman was actually kind of performing at a top five MVP level in the American League. I think the front office, you know, is responsible for the kind of lineup that was assembled, where and for its heavy reliance on a number of young players. And I think that there was a belief in the front office and in the coaching staff that they might be able to tap into more power upside with some members of the lineup. I think Caleb Durbin in particular, there was a lot of conversation at the time of acquiring him that, oh, this is a guy whose bat to ball skill is so elite that you can just kind of like change the attack angle of his swing a little bit, and all of a sudden he's banging balls off the wall or getting them over the green monster. And that can be a difficult change to make, and it can actually, especially trying to implement that mid-season, that can have negative effects. I think that it's also a part of how the players have been able to go about implementing game plans, and you know, their ability to identify the right kinds of pitches to attack and drive with the right kind of swing. So it's a little of everything has to go into this kind of struggle.
Yeah, and speaking of some of these young guys that have come up here, I know you wrote a little bit about Marcelo Meyer. What stood out about him for you, and what kind of things are you looking for the rest of the season from him to really solidify himself here in the major leagues?
I think that there are some good things that Marcelo Meyer is doing. I realize that the surface level numbers are not good and not remotely what his track record has been. I think that he's actually done an okay job of swing decisions. He's actually doing a better job of swinging at pitches that are in the strike zone and middle pitches, especially than the average big leaguer. And he's chasing a lower percentage of pitches outside of the strike zone than the average big leaguer. That's pretty good as a starting point for a young player. That said, there have been some just glaring holes in his game that have been pretty easy for opposing pitchers to exploit. I think that he's something like 2-for-34 in his big league career at this point against pitches that are kind of in the shadow zone at the bottom of the strike zone. So pitchers are just attacking him relentlessly down, 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 and making him prove that he can punish them for those pitches. And I think that especially changeup down below the zone, he's just been super vulnerable on those. And so until he proves that that those are pitches that he can handle, and you see some hard contact against them, but typically he's out in front and ripping them foul. Until the timing on those improves just a little bit to where he's driving those balls in play and forcing pitchers into a game plan where they have to give him fastballs, he's not going to see a lot of fastballs that he can handle. So I think that these are kind of normal growing pains that a lot of young players face early in their big league careers. And you have to kind of earn the pitches that you can drive. And to this point, Marcelo Meyer has not been able to earn them. And, you know, we'll see where it goes. Like it's pretty common for young players to be able to close up some of those holes and then to start getting into a good rhythm. And I've seen Marcelo Meyer throughout his minor league career across levels emerge as one of the best players on the field. But there's some work to go to get there. And there are no givens. There are no you can't just assume that that's going to happen with time and repetition.
Speaking with Alex Speer from the Boston Globe about the Boston Red Sox here, and I want to turn to the pitching rotation at the moment here. Garrett Crochet, of course, did throw a live batting practice session yesterday, another benchmark in his eventual return to the rotation, which still may not necessarily be soon. But I'm going to ask you this question because I'm kind of intrigued by it right now. I'll kind of ask it straight out. Once Garrett Crochet returns to this rotation, is Peyton Tolley still a part of the rotation?
Well, I think, you know, if you were to say Peyton Tolley, if he continues his performance in the fashion that he has, I think he has to be, right? Like, I think that when you have someone who's capable of, you know, of handling, like, he's not only punching out a bunch of guys, but he's attacking the strike zone. He's showing an ability to compete at the big league level and work deep into games and to kind of like keep pushing his ceiling of the kind of pitcher he can be. Then yeah, I think that there's I think it would be hard to send Peyton Tolley to have Peyton Tolley anywhere but in the Red Sox rotation based on his performance, assuming that he sustains that. You know, there's still probably, 2-3 starts before a decision like that is made. We'll see where that goes. We'll see where the health of the rest of the rotation is. We'll see if the Red Sox consider a 6-man rotation, right? Because they've been pretty mindful about managing the workload of Tolley and of Connolly early as they get used to being part of a different schedule at the big league level than they faced at the minor league level. So there's some variables there, but I think that to your question, I don't see how this version of Peyton Tolley would be a candidate for removal from the rotation.
Yeah, and looking at some of the injuries, especially Garrett Crochet, is there any? I know we've seen kind of some of the updates, but what's your just view on this? How do you see the Garrett Crochet injury, and is it in your mind? Do you think it is what they're telling us, or are you concerned maybe it's it's worse than what's at face value with this Crochet injury?
No, because I think that the velocity, even though the top end velocity wasn't there this year, I think that he was holding a pretty good baseline of a pretty good baseline velocity, pitch shape. I did think that his mechanics were out of whack throughout the first month of the season. Whether or not that was the shoulder or whether or not that was just kind of like losing feel and rhythm on the mound, I thought that his posture was kind of more squared up to the hitters and was eroding some of the deception that he's had in the past. And I didn't think that he was kind of creating the same slingshot crossfire power in his delivery that had been there last year. So I think that there are, I'm not worried, I don't think, about a major injury. I don't think there's reason for that based on how he's kind of responding to strength tests and all of that as he works his way back from the injured list. But it's going to be really interesting to see whether or not his mechanics are in a place that allows him to dominate hitters again instead of, you know, kind of being the inconsistent version of Garrett Crochet that we saw in the month of April.
Boy, and I'll kind of ask another kind of big question about this Red Sox team, because they've obviously made a big roll of the dice already in firing Alex Cora and moving on from a number of coaches on the staff, but the team hasn't really gotten much better since that move was made. What do you anticipate maybe the next big roll of the dice being for this Boston Red Sox team? Is it going to be being active in the trade market, or, you know, what do you kind of see as, you know, happening going forward right now?
I do think that the, you know, obviously there's a different level of in-season risk-taking that the Red Sox are showing a willingness to absorb, right? Like the fact that they fired Alex Cora and, you know, and overhauled the coaching staff in a way that has very little precedent in season in Major League history tells you that they are willing to make some big swings on the organization as constituted. So for that reason, I think that I'm most interested to see exactly how the team approaches the trade deadline and how it approaches kind of risk risk assessment. The level of risk tolerance that it's willing to absorb, what kinds of prospects they will make available this year at the trade deadline. They have made some pretty big names available in Craig Breslow's past trade deadlines, but they were not ever able to line up. And I just wonder whether or not they're just going to kind of identify, you know. Again, this is just, you know, kind of questions that you're asking aloud at this point, but whether or not they're going to be pushing more chips in on the table because they seem, you know, there does seem to be a different way of doing business this season than there really ever has been under Craig Breslow, and in some ways under any of the, you know, under any Red Sox head of baseball operations in quite some time.
Yeah, and just looking kind of at the bigger picture of the trade deadline, do you maybe see the looming lockout as influencing how every team goes about the deadline, not only just the Red Sox, or do you think I feel like it has to be in some ways weighing on the mind of some of these ownership in front offices.
Yeah, right. Like it clearly has to affect the calculus of the value of acquiring a player for, let's say there's a player who remains under team control through the 2027 season. Well, it affects this question of how much 2027 there will be is certainly going to affect in some way the value that you're willing to give up for a player who's available now versus one, you know, versus whatever prospect or long-term talent you'll be giving up to get him. We saw that in the, you know, in the compressed 2020 COVID season because there was this question hovering over, like, is there going to be a postseason? And that certainly did have an impact on the trade market. I think that unquestionably it will influence, except for pure rentals, just about every team's calculus.
Very, very interesting there. I know that's one thing baseball fans probably don't even want to think a whole lot about is the labor situation going into next year. I'll kind of go back to the current series here right now with the Red Sox and the Atlanta Braves. It was certainly nice to see, you know, six runs go on the board last night for Boston, but a rare one where the bullpen didn't really get it done after Ranger Suarez gave them an opportunity to win a game. And they're playing the best team in baseball right now in the Atlanta Braves. What sorts of things are the Red Sox going to need to execute in order to win at least one of these final two games?
The lineup, you know, what the lineup was able to do early against Spencer Strider and sustaining through the game, I think, was, you know, they are taking better at-bats. And again, there's more carry on those balls in the air now at Fenway Park than there has been for most of the season, now that you're getting some of these warmer temperatures. So they were able to take some advantage of that, which, again, like if The Reds, how many games would the Red Sox have been doing backflips over this year to be able to score six runs?
Right.
So I think that that was, you know, building off of that, you know, and the quality of the at-bats, you know, throughout the lineup, with a bunch of guys who did not start the year on the big league roster or in the lineup, like, it seems to have ticked up in ways that are very interesting. So I think that continuing that, and then, but it's a lot to be able to try to shut down the Braves lineup as deep as it is, as much power as it has, from top to bottom. So, I think that, you're probably going to be looking at other pivotal situations. You're asking, what do the Red Sox need to do differently? Well, if their bullpen has been able to hold things down, right? Like if Greg Weitzert is able to to strand a couple of inherited runners rather than permitting them to score, then you're looking at a different outcome. So that those middle relievers in front of Slayton, and especially Whitlock and Chapman, a lot rides on how they're able to kind of navigate the middle of the game.
Yeah, Jared Karrabas did not hold back on the Greg Weiser calling him the Uber driver, always getting everybody home safe last night on Twitter, which I was like, Jared, unbelievable, man. Karrabas always finds a way to put a little comedy into it, as us Red Sox fans had a tough watch last night. I'll leave you this kind of a quick one, Alex. Just what's been your overall reaction to the AL-NL discretion? Obviously, Jeff mentioned it, this Braves team, 37-18 now, and in the American League, we don't see that kind of dominance, right? Whether it's the Dodgers, the Padres, the Phillies, what have you made of that kind of duality there, where it's just the National League really seems to have the better rosters and the better construction right now and are playing better baseball than the American League?
I'll admit that I'm puzzled by it, because, like, I thought that, you know, when the Tigers added, like, Framber Valdez to pitch alongside, like, Skubal, like, oh, that's a formidable team. Like, everyone takes them to be a kind of runaway AL Central winner. Nope, they're having just as much of a difficult time as the Red Sox. Like, I don't know what to make of the fact that the American League has been this bad, aside from saying it's the worst I've ever seen either league. Like, I cannot believe how bad the level of play has been in the American League. The fact that virtually everyone remains in it, regardless of whether or not they're in last place, because there's been, like, no one has been able, except for really the Tampa Bay Rays, which is its own fascinating absurdity, to play with any kind of consistency. It is a very, very strange league, which opens the door for teams to, like, the fact that the landscape is so flat permits quick movement within it. So I think that's one of the, like, you know, there are a number of teams, the Red Sox among them, that have no business still thinking of themselves as contenders, and yet here they are, and they aren't that far removed from where if they go on a 7-game winning streak, you know, are they in possession of a wild card spot? Is that unrealistic? Maybe, but, like, it's still possible to squint and see how the standings can shake up really quickly in the American League. It is a weird, weird league.
It sure is. IKF put it very, very well last night, that the Red Sox are lucky they're in the American League and not the National League right now. Alex Speer from the Boston Globe, thanks so much for sharing some time with us here today. We appreciate it, and we'll look forward to talking again.
Look forward to it. Thanks, guys.
You got it. Again, Alex Speer from the Boston Globe. We'll keep things rolling on our Heidi's Brooklyn Deli Lunch Hour next. We'll speak with Maine Mariners head coach and general manager Rick Kowalski to put the finishing touches on their 25-26 season next. It's Middays with Mannix and Mannix on our Heidi's Brooklyn Deli Lunch Hour.